And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I'm talking about this show. Whew, goes like from Huntsville all the way back over to Chattanooga. I mean, from Tuscaloosa all the way back over to Gadsden. I'm talking about all the way down to that prettiest little town on the plains called Auburn. And yes, stretching across the border then to Fort Benning. Fort Benning, Georgia. I called it Fort Benning. And then there's big old patches of North Georgia and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Text lines, again, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Coming up here in about 20 minutes or so, we'll be joined by Brian Jodis. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. But he is with the American Federation for Children, a national-level organization for which he serves as their national press secretary, to talk about President Trump's education order. Let me get a few more text messages first. Allie from Athens checking in. She says, Colonel, back in the 1980s, in the early days of homeschooling, I was homeschooling as a single mom. To keep food on the table, I worked at the Sheraton Inn in downtown Seattle, and they had a national NEA convention at the hotel. Said, I worked the head table, happened to get a hold of a copy of their agenda, and they were going to do everything they could to make homeschooling illegal nationally. They are not the friend of anyone, and it does my heart good to see them challenged on such an epic level. Allie, you always have a direct connection to something I talk about, it seems like, but you are spot on, sister. Thank you very much. John from Huntsville. He's already talking about Alabama basketball, just so you know.
Yeah, I know. I see it. I see it.
He says, Phil, spectacular monologue. Also, JP, I got to say, after seeing another dreadful defensive performance by Alabama, I'm glad I picked them to go home in the next round in the JP Madness bracket.
Da-da. We'll see, John. We'll
Da-da-da.
See.
Thomas from Athens says, education block grants to the states, maybe to the legislatures thereof, not to state school boards, as even in red states, some of those boards are deep blue. That is true. He said, or even grant to a new state office for money management to ensure money gets to the students' families. Well, we do that. In Alabama, we actually do that. That's actually the part of the CHOOSE Act, is the allocation of those funds. Fritzy, I see your text. I'll come back to that. Thank you very much. And then Shorty from Anderson says, hey, Phil, that was another fantastic monologue. Hope you and JP and your family have a wonderful weekend. Thank you. Thank you, Shorty. Appreciate you very much. Okay, so what's this thing that President Trump did? Well, it's first of all, it's monumental. And I took issue with a lib on Twitter X earlier, just before the show started, who was trying to downplay it as there's nothing, there's no there. There's nothing to work. This is a non-issue. This can't. So first of all, yes, actually it is. I will ask you this. When's the last time you saw a president of any stripe attempt to do away with a major department at all, ever, in the history of ever? I'm waiting. Is there a cricket sound we can use on this one? I'm waiting. Anybody? That's what I thought. So, first of all, take a look at the leadership involved in doing something like this. It's bold. It's audacious. It's novel. It's new. It creates a case of first impression in some ways. That being said, what's it also doing? It's addressing a problem, an actual problem. Y'all, when you've got an organization that is, in terms of, you know, the big picture, is actually fairly new. It's only been around since 1980. That's like in my lifetime, certainly, many of your lifetimes. This organization is not super old, and yet it has spent trillions of dollars accomplishing what exactly? Now, libs will tell you it plays a very important role. It makes sure the states don't screw things up, and it administers money. We can do that in other places. And oh, by the way, maybe the states under the 10th Amendment should be given the opportunity to run themselves with a little more autonomy. Maybe it will create, oh, I don't know, like an educational free market. Huh. How's that work, Phil? Well, let me ask you this. Have you seen where some states are great for business and some are not? Have you? It matters, doesn't it? When a business is looking to set up shop somewhere and they're saying, we're going to move, what do? They start shopping for a state that has a business climate that they can work within, that gives them the ability to have greater competitive, you know, opportunities to build their widgets or expand their services, to hire employees. They have a recruiting pool to draw from. They have all kinds of things that make it worth their while to go there. It creates a business free market. Businesses will go where businesses are best suited. If you're looking at a family that wants to move somewhere or a company that wants to place its people somewhere, one of the things they always look at for quality of life is the educational environment. They do. Go take a look. If they're looking for a new locale, they're going to be looking at a variety of things, cost of living, economic drivers, and one of the things they'll also look at, education, because they know their employees have kids and they want them to have a good school. So if the free market is going on in the educational arena, it stands to reason that it's going to make a difference, and some states will rise and some will not, but then those who do not, if the free market is truly going, will then try to be competitive with those who are, and new opportunities will arise. And guess what? It won't be all because big government sat up in D.C. and goes, well, here's how it's going to happen, and we're going to send you more money, but you got to take care of the transgenders, and you got to teach that we're all racist, and you got to do these things. And oh, by the way, send us more of your tax dollars first, because we want to hire more bureaucratic staff, and we need some more buildings in downtown D.C. That's where we've been. Let's see. I'm trying to think. How did the educational achievement scores go over the last 40 years since we put this bloated organization in place? Pretty much flat. Yep. We're looking right now at epic downturns in where we are. In fact, I'll pull this piece up right here. Here's a copy of Trump's executive order. I got it. Yes, I do. You know why? Because I'm here for you guys and I go find the stuff so you don't have to. Trump signed the executive order yesterday, March 20th, on my birthday, actually. By authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, and to enable parents, teachers, and communities to best ensure student success, it is hereby ordered. Bam. And then it goes from there. Talks about the fact that the experiment, he says, of controlling American education through federal programs and dollars and the unaccountable bureaucracy they support has plainly failed our children, our teachers, and our families. And then he goes on to say, taxpayers during COVID spent $200 billion at the federal level on top of the $60 billion they already spend on the federal level every year on one of the newest cabinet agencies called the Department of Education. He points out it was created by in 1979, came into existence in 1980. And the DOE, he says, does not educate anyone. And yet, somehow or another, it maintains a public relations office that includes over 80 staff at a cost of more than $10 million per year just for that. But then he points out one of the most significant things. We have this multi-trillion dollar expense called the Department of Education. And yet, today, he says, American reading and math scores are near historic lows. In a recent, by the way, this is the NAEP, N-A-E-P, the National Assessment of Educational Progress. This is the report card. This is not like he went and cherry-picked some, you know, right-wing organization that came up with what he wanted them to say because he paid them. No, this is the NAEP. This is the National Assessment of Educational Progress. This is the scorecard accepted in the educational arena to determine how scores should be reviewed for each year. 70% of eighth graders are below proficiency in reading. 70%. 72% of eighth graders are below proficiencies in math. That's inexcusable. That is unacceptable. That is just awful. He says currently also the Department of Education manages a student loan debt portfolio that has more than $1.6 trillion in debt that it manages. He said that that makes them the same size as the nation's largest bank, Wells Fargo. And yet, he said, we've got to get away from the DOA being a bank. And so he wants to reassign any of those financial obligations to other departments better suited for it. Or for that matter, outsource it to a private institution. Novel idea. And then he says, closing the Department of Education and returning the authority to the states to the maximum extent appropriate and permitted by law. There's an important phrase. He did not say, I'm ignoring Congress. I'm defying the Constitution. I don't give a rat's hind end what y'all think about the law. I'm going to do what I want to do. They're going to try and tell you he's doing that, but listen to the wording. The Secretary of Education shall, to the maximum extent appropriate and permitted by law, take all necessary steps to facilitate the closure of the Department of Education. Now, the lib that I was taking to task on this on Twitter a while ago was trying to say nothing to see here. Nothing's really going to happen. Well, you know what? I take issue with that. before I dive into the rest of the stuff, here are the things that I believe this is going to indicate. Here are the things that I believe are going to happen because there is a there. It is very important. And I would say, number one, this is called mitigating bureaucracy. I mean, some would call it like separating the wheat from the chaff. You're literally taking the stuff that's good and worth saving, and you're going to place it over here where perhaps it can be more effectively utilized, and then you're going to downsize the rest. You're going to have like block grant funding to states, aka the 10th Amendment. Actually trust the states and the parents to be empowered to do what they can do. And doing so also reduce regulatory burdens that have been stifling creativity. And how about this? Centralized government micromanagement of education has spent trillions in 40 years, has little to show for it, so why don't we get rid of some of the micromanagement and see if all of a sudden we can spur that innovation we need? And then the bottom line is this. Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is still the definition of insanity. So, wow. All this to say, the executive order signed yesterday, I guarantee you the teachers union is already working up their lawyers and getting ready to file suit. I cannot imagine that this is not going to have a dramatic impact, and I cannot imagine that we're going to see the Department of Education be able to maintain in its current status quo status. Just saying. All right, we get back from the break. I'm going to tell you what new Secretary of Education Linda McMahon says her vision is for doing this, and then I'll give you some examples of why we really, really, really got to do it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, so we're back on this topic right here. I'm calling it mega. Mega! I'm coining this one. I'm claiming it. I'm saying I'm the first one to say it. Maybe somebody else said it, but I haven't seen it. I'm thinking I'm the first one to say mega. Make education great again. Kim from Athens says, fantastic monologue. Said, I taught in a high school when I was younger. All we taught was test prep. Trump is the best thing to come to education in my lifetime, she says. Thanks, Kim, and thanks for your service. And then Fritzy from Huntsville again saying, happy birthday. Thank you, Fritzy. Appreciate it. David from Coleman says, what was the test score of eighth graders in 1978? I don't know, but it's bad now, so obviously it wasn't any better. Paula from Lacey Springs says, great monologue, all caps. Said, I agree completely that education should be a state responsibility. She said, by the way, I homeschooled all three of our children to ensure they got a quality education and developed a Christian worldview. Good for you, Paula, and thank you very, very much. We got a lot going on here with this. And right now, I will say, Trump appears to have appointed someone who has the moxie to get it done, you know? And I think I can really say that about anybody he's appointed to a cabinet position. He's appointed some, there's a lot of moxie up there in D.C. right now. I mean, this is like, whew, there's a whole bunch of type A's, if you know what I'm saying, in this administration. But Linda McMahon has a piece in Fox News this morning. It's titled, My Vision for Eliminating the Department of Education. Have you ever seen somebody take a job who said that their mission in life was to work themselves out of a job? That's unusual.
It is unusual. And yet still got the job done to get themselves out of the job. Followed exactly, through with it.
Exactly right. She says that basically, hang on 1 second, I got to sign something for people walking in the door. Okay.
He's signing autographs, mid-show.
I am.
We have this crazy fan come in here.
Wow, I got a crazy life. Okay, so I got to sign stuff for the law firm while I'm sitting here on the radio. This is crazy. All right, back to work. Linda McMahon herself saying, too often we have prioritized federal micromanagement instead of support for meaningful learning. It has perpetually demanded budget increases, all without demonstrating a return on investment. She says her plan is literally to make sure that we eliminate and or relocate the functions and operations of the DOE. Do you get that? Eliminate or relocate. Meaning, it's not like the whole thing's just going away overnight. No, we're gonna figure out what works, keep it, put it where it's best served to work best, and then do away with the stuff we don't need. And then the other thing is to get rid of all the DEI crap. Because, we got a lot of DEI. I mean, we got a lot of DEI crap. And she says this, she said, we can also dismantle the last administration's DEI agenda and reorient the civil rights enforcement so that we're protecting all students from harassment and discrimination, including, she says, Jewish students studying on elite campuses and female athletes on the field and in the locker room. You hear what she's saying? The stuff that the Biden administration said, meh, you know, we're not so worried about that. We really want this more DEI. That's gone. That's out the door. Teachers union's having a fit. Randy Weingarten, piece from Red State. Closest, she said, the closer the teachers union mouthpiece Randy Weingarten gets to, as the Brits might say, losing her nut once and for all, the better. As if she ever had one, he says. But yeah, Randy Weingarten is screaming right now. And it's because their ever-dwindling power is starting to fade. I mean, think about who they just had as the Secretary of Education before that. Miguel Cardona, a huge teachers union hack, a former lib from up in the Northeast who basically personified everything liberal about education, became the Secretary of Education. He personally is the one who signed off on the Title IX reinvention that put guys in the girls' locker rooms. But just so you know, we're looking at things like, how about this? The Federalist, Dateline yesterday. We're finding out now the Biden Education Department like literally has burned $100 million on so-called anti-racist social workers and DEI for K-12 schools. I mean, y'all, it's just like money was water to them. Just pour it out on the ground. Literally right now, they've identified over $100,964,880 that went out to 26 colleges and universities for far-left training in DEI. Things like privilege, oppression, racial capitalism, whatever that is, white supremacy. But it's all out there. We can find examples like this. An $8 million grant to Georgia State University's Masters of Social Work program to direct what they call a youth mental health mandate for diversity and social justice course. Okay. Which, by the way, quote, focuses on understanding and applying multicultural concepts to practice developing awareness of one's cultural identity and exploring. $8 million. Florida International had one similar. University of Alaska Anchorage had one similar. We got University of Alaska Anchorage also offering a master's in social work for engaging diversity through justice and anti-oppressive social work practice, all paid for through the Department of Education grants. Listen, the bottom line is this. I don't care what the left says. This executive order that was signed yesterday is huge, not just in its import and its impact, but also in its leadership. Because this is the thing that so many would just dare not to touch. They didn't want to get screamed at. They didn't want to have the teachers union attack them. They didn't want to have to give up the donations they've been putting in their campaign coffers from the teachers union. But I'm going to tell you right now, it's big doings. All right, coming up next, we have a guest coming on top of the next hour. Hour number two about to kick in. We got the American Federation for Children coming on board. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Friday. We're going to get you all the way to go home time on this afternoon. But in the meantime, we're going to continue this conversation. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and claim that I coined the phrase mega. Make education great again. That's what I'm saying. We're in mega right now, first part of the show. And I want to bring in somebody who's got a national perspective on this. I mean, I told you what we've been dealing with here at the state. I was proud to be in the Alabama State Senate when we passed the very first measures of school choice. I am loving what I'm seeing right now, where we not only have state-level action taking place around the nation, but now we have the federal backing. I mean, the wind is at the back for education change and choice. And there's an organization out there that's been like a bunch of warriors in the mix for this, the American Federation for Children. A national organization that fights for the opportunities for kids to get a better education. And Brian Jodas is on the phone right now. He's their national press secretary, and he's joining us right here on Right Side. Brian Jodas, how you doing?
Colonel, great to be with you and your listeners, and excited to have this conversation today.
Well, thank you for making time. I really appreciate that. I know this is last minute, too. We were texting early this morning, and I just really appreciate you guys being available.
Well, listen, as things go and as news breaks and as we continue to see, like you talked about, that momentum across the nation, we're just excited to see what's happening. And what a breath of fresh air,
yeah.
Right, to have the president talk about strongly believing in school choice and then to take executive order action to drive that home, right, to work towards eliminating the Department of Education, to get bureaucracy out of education, to get funding back as close to students as possible at the state level.
Yeah.
It's morning in America, and it's a great day, sir.
All right, and we can all go home now. That was great. Hey, listen, let me just ask you real quick. I want you to back up and give the audience just a nutshell of who you guys are at AFC, the American Federation for Children.
Well, and grateful for your leadership in during your time in the state Senate and the chance to be able to talk about it. You know, it's our mission at the American Federation for Children to empower families, especially lower-income families, with freedom to choose the best K-12 education for their children. That means getting education and school choice decision and dollars as close to the students as possible. It doesn't happen through that bureaucratic middleman like we talked about. And so, really, we are on a mission across the country to help unlock school choice in states. And we've been very active in states across America, yours included. My home state of North Carolina, where I grew up and live today. But we've got more fights happening. You know, big wins in Tennessee. School choice battle rages on in Texas right now, and can't wait for a positive outcome there. So we've had a lot of momentum, and AFC's been very proud to be a part of it for a long time.
Well, y'all have. You've done a great job. One of your staff members has been a friend of mine for a number of years. But let me ask you this.
He did want me to say War Eagle as the NCAA basketball tournament rolls on here. Roll Tide, War Eagle, and even go Hornets. I mean, what a great story for Alabama State to get in the mix as well.
Awesome. Okay, appreciate that. Hey, listen, let me ask you real quick. Not real quick. We got time. But the executive order that was signed yesterday by President Trump, and you said it a moment ago, what a wonderful thing it is to see the President of the United States advocating for parents to have rights and a say in what happens with the education of their child. But what are your perceptions of what the impact or the import is of that executive order? How do you see it playing out?
Sure. Well, you know, the President made a lot of promises on the campaign trail, and he's been rapidly working to accomplish a lot of those. This is another one of those promises made, promises kept as it relates to the Department of Education, because quite frankly, for far too long, we've had this bureaucratic middleman in Washington, and that doesn't serve families best in the state of Alabama. And so what he set out to do was say, look, I want to take every action possible to rein this thing in. He's got a great secretary on the job now in Linda McMahon that's aligned on that. And yesterday was the next step. And this is a multi-step approach to ultimately ensuring that education goes back to the states and that education dollar gets as close to that student as possible. And when you look at the things that the Department of Education was tasked with doing, there was too much duplicative offices, there was too much waste,
yeah.
There were too many things that didn't align with educating students. I mean, I brought some stats, Colonel, that might elevate your blood pressure a little bit, but this was a readout from the Department of Education that we got yesterday talking about states having more than 2,000 unique data reporting requirements from the U.S. Department of Education annually, and President Biden, under his leadership, the Department of Education added rules that imposed nearly $3.9 billion in costs and 4.2 million paperwork hours. How is that helping a single child in America?
Well, apparently, based upon the NAEP scores, it's not.
It's not.
We're looking at reading levels and math levels, you know, below standard across the board, eighth graders nationwide. So apparently, all the bureaucratic nightmare that they've been thrusting down on the states has done nada to improve scores.
Yeah, and part of our hope, too, can be that by eliminating this bureaucratic bloat and cutting a lot of this red tape, teachers can get back to doing what they do best, which is teaching kids in our classroom. I mean, that's the ultimate end goal here, and the teachers' unions have had a stranglehold on education for far too long. That bureaucracy is being busted up because what we need is a three-key approach to success in a classroom. Motivated teacher, engaged parent, student who wants to learn.
Yeah.
But you've heard Randy Weingarten and teachers union loyalists for years, just scream about buildings and adults without focusing on the end user, which is the student. That is changing rapidly. That's why the fight has been so hard over the last few weeks, specifically as it relates to this. But we applaud President Trump for the work he's doing. Now Congress has the task of making this official. But even if they won't do that, we're heading in the right direction to get education back to the states. And we've got some great programs that are coming and that can come because of this. And I talked about that multi-tier approach. Congress has before them right now the Educational Choice for Children Act. This would be a change in the tax code, keeps the federal government out of education, lets scholarship-granting organizations stand up in states across America, and then Alabama families could get access to some private school tuition assistance to help them send their kid to the school of their choice.
Well, I mean, I think that'd be huge if Congress would do this. I know the margins are pretty slim right now on congressional votes. If it's a polarized issue and they have to get to 60, it's going to be almost impossible in the Senate and equally impossible in the House. But yet, this is one of those things that President Trump himself called the civil rights issue of our lifetime. So what do you think? I mean, you guys have a national presence, and you're part of a consortium of other groups that stand for the similar things. Do you see Congress being willing to take this up at this point?
Well, here's what Congress can and should do this year. As they're going through the process of reconciliation, get that Educational Choice for Children Act in there, because it is pivotal to unlocking education at the state level and putting dollars in kids' backpacks. That's the priority. Get that thing into reconciliation, $10 billion spread across the country through tax credits. It's a great way to keep the federal government out of students' backpacks, but get those resources to them as quickly as possible. So we encourage all members of Congress, members of the U.S. Senate, to get on board for the Educational Choice for Children Act. The president has made it part of his agenda. They got to get this done this year.
Yeah, and I completely agree. Hey, let me ask you this with about 2 or 3 minutes left to go. Going back to the dismantling of the Department of Education, you know, one of the things that we've talked about regulatory burdens, we've talked about educational scores, we've talked about, but one of the things that also needs to be remembered and like never forgotten is it was the Department of Education that advanced DEI to epic levels, to include, by the way, the reimagining of Title IX, putting boys in girls' locker rooms. So getting rid of this Department of Education also gets rid of a lot of that woke leftist progressive policy that was being couched as educational environment needs. What are your thoughts on that?
Colonel, the nation's report card shows that 69% of fourth graders can't meet basic standards in reading, 61% in math, 70% of eighth graders can't meet those basic standards in reading and math. We got to get back to the basics and focus on what will help our students be the best they can be, the best citizens, the best future workers across our country.
Yeah, I completely agree. Listen, this is also going to extend not just to K-12. The Department of Education does have some purview over things like student loans and the stringers that go along with them very often on college campuses. And they've also turned a blind eye to a lot of behaviors on college campuses in recent years. What are your thoughts on the upper level?
Well, there's also a conversation to be had about how we're crippling the next generation of Americans with unthinkable debt, with a $1.6 trillion student loan that was run by the federal government. There are better, more efficient ways to be able to do that. And there's also ways, and one of the beauties of school choice is we're able to find ways for students to talk about being college and career ready. Right? We've got an ample workforce. We've got to get kids ready for that. They got to be able to read, write, and handle math if we're going to be able to expect them to be the next leaders in our country. And so we got to get back to the basics. We also got to find ways to cut where we can and come up with some more efficiencies. And I think that's what the president's focused on. I think by reining in DOE this way, getting education back to the states, getting more parents empowered with school choice, all is going to help in the future.
Well, and listen, and again, I appreciate y'all's work. And I've said multiple times on this show that school choice is like putting the free market principles of business into the education arena. It creates competition, which creates improvements. And the better mousetrap, if you have the better school, people will flock to it. And the other schools who don't will either die off or they'll have to improve. I think the same could be said state to state. By devolving the power back to the states, getting rid of the centralized bureaucracy in D.C., you almost have the opportunity now for states to become incubators of the better mousetrap in education. And then states will compete against each other to do better jobs. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know who doesn't like competition, though, are monopolies. And again, I said it earlier, and I'll say it again. You know, the big education loyalists and the teachers unions have had a stranglehold on education. That bureaucratic bloat is being broken up, and a golden age in American education is on the way.
Oh, man. That's just good stuff. Hey, Brian, listen, if folks want to find out more about American Federation for Children, where can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely, and always appreciate the chance to do that. We're at federationforchildren.org. They can follow us at School Choice Now on X, or they can follow me, for the latest news at AFC Press. And we're always here to add more warriors to the fight for school choice. And for your time in the state legislature, we're grateful for that. And on behalf of a grateful nation for your service in the Army, thankful for that as well.
Hey, Brian Jodas, we appreciate you, man. National Press Secretary for American Federation for Children. Appreciate you making time on short notice today. And we'll have you on again sometime soon, all right?
Yes, sir, anytime.
All right, take care. Well, that was great. That was awesome. Yeah, I love hearing him say things like, I mean, this is a guy, by the way, who's been in the mix. He's been in the fray. You know, he and his organization and others like him have been fighting this cause. And now he's able to say it's morning in America. I mean, you catch that phrase earlier, it's morning in America. And listen, it's amazing how many things have created that kind of mood in the last 60 days. It is morning in America. It is our job now to capitalize on it. Once the daylight hits, the farmer has all day to do the plow and reap the harvest, but you got to do the work. That's what I'm saying. You got to do the work. So it's incumbent upon us not to waste this opportunity. All right, we're taking a break. Take it to the break there, JP. Y'all stay tuned. We got plenty more. Get some text messages and clean up, and then we're heading down to the bottom of the hour where we'll just switch gears for a while and go JP on sports. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, just saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, I got to remind you guys, we do a lot of stuff here at Right Side Media. So, yes, Right Side Radio is just one production of Right Side Media, the parent company. Right Side Media does a ton of stuff. And listen, for a bunch of ruffians like y'all, Right Side ruffians care about things like, you know, conservative content and, you know, whether you can watch it, read it, listen to it, whatever, we provide it. So I want you to know there's a ton of stuff on our website you might want to check out. RightSideMedia.org is the website. All our stuff's on there, to include today's latest podcast from Birdman, who was actually on the show yesterday. Birdman has his latest Right Click podcast came out today. You can find that on there, along with all the others. We got Emily Jones's Controversial Mom. We got My Right Philosophy. We got Jared Hudson's Liberty Minute. JP has got his Out of Right Field. And then we've also got the latest today, Right Click by Birdman. Check them out. They're all video form, and then you can also find audio form podcasts as well. Plus, we podcast audio of this show every day. So if you miss part of it, you can always grab it back. And based on the trends we're seeing in our numbers, a lot of y'all are doing that, and we really appreciate it. So yeah, go see us on YouTube. Go find us on our social media platforms, but definitely check out our website, rightsidemedia.org, which, by the way, has the merch store on it. I was just approving new merch today, too, by the way, JP. New merch coming.
Is that so? New merch.
New merch should be here very shortly. Shirts, T-shirts, hats, the Bulletproof Influence highball glasses, all of it in the merch store, rightsidemedia.org. Okay, enough of the shameless plug. Tell you what, let me take a few text messages. I'll do that first. I was about to read an article, but I'm going to go to this. Lisa from Huntsville says, I have so much I want to say. Oh, apparently you do. That's a long text. So I have so much I want to say about education in this country, but it would take days for you to read my text. I'm old enough that I started school before the Department of Education put its tentacles into education. We learned stuff. We took tests. We were basically told you have to know this for the ACT or the SAT if you want to get to college. So I feel like I have a very well-rounded education. I was not taught things like just taking a stupid standardized test. I'm so sick of teachers' unions and teachers who have no business teaching. I have teachers in my family, she says, and they loved what they did. I had zero desire to teach myself even after earning a history degree. Basically, I stayed at home, raised my children, homeschooled one for a year, and I hope President Trump is successful in reforming education in this country, even if we can't completely get rid of the DOE. Wow, Lisa, thank you. Wonderful text, great phraseology, you are the one. So yeah, I agree with you completely. And you know, it strikes me, I mean, I was never like the stellar student. I was a good student, but I was not a stellar student. And I was a B average student kind of guy. But I graduated just a couple of years after the DOE was actually formed. So it didn't have enough time to get its tentacles into me. But I'm just thankful that Charlene and I were able to do some things for our kids' education that were more choice oriented and work hard to make it happen. But I'm thankful now that we're seeing more and more that parents are going to have those options like readily available to them. Thomas Mathen says, hey, Colonel, happy belated birthday. Thank you very much. Same date as my earning my BS from Auburn University. How about that? However, he says, your voice text didn't work on this one. He says, I celebrate the anniversary by becoming a full member of the church established by Jesus Christ. Oh, he says, I also like to celebrate the anniversary. I get it. Thomas, thank you, and I appreciate that very much. Yeah, I actually accepted Christ in March of 1978, so I have two birthdays in March. Brand spanking new in the text lines. Who we got? David from Decatur says, Phil, I think the phrase you're looking for is the loveliest village on the plains. That's the nickname for the city of Auburn. Have I been saying it wrong?
You've been saying loveliest.
Is that not right?
Oh, wait, no, sorry, not loveliest. You've been saying prettiest. Prettiest, yes, yes.
Well, then, by golly, let us make sure that we say the right compliment. Because if it's not said the right compliment, is it still a compliment?
Well, who's deciding what the right or wrong compliment is?
Apparently I am. I own the microphone. And then John from Brownsboro talking about federal student loans. Yeah, I get it, man. I get it. All right, listen, we're coming right back with another round of JP on Sports. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.